But let's move on to a continued discussion of targeted therapy of AML and hear about your 76-year-old man.
So this was a wonderful gentleman, 76-year-old gentleman, lived on a farm up in Connecticut, and he had developed acute myeloid leukemia back in 2015 with an IDH2 mutation. He actually was treated locally by his local physician with induction chemotherapy, got into a remission, and subsequently relapsed after getting consolidation, probably about 7 or 8 months after getting consolidation. So he came down to see me. We did another bone marrow biopsy. We saw he had an IDH2 mutation, that it persisted. As opposed to the FLT3 experience that I told you about before, it's much more common that patients who don't have an IDH mutation continue not to have an IDH mutation, and patients who do have an IDH mutation will continue to have an IDH mutation. So there isn't this discordance like in the FLT3 experience. At the time, enasidenib, the IDH2 inhibitor, was on a clinical study. So we enrolled him on this clinical study. He started this oral medication. After about 4 months on therapy, we noticed a couple of very interesting things. So the first is that this gentleman, who had been pancytopenic, and specifically profoundly neutropenic with an absolute neutrophil count of 0.1, started developing the appearance of neutrophils in the peripheral blood. So his neutrophil count went 0.9, 1.6, 2.2. And at the same time he came into me, and I remember this very clearly, he said, "Dr. Stein, I have a little bit more shortness of breath than I usually do." He sort of had a little bit of cardiac issues. "But, you know, I'm finding that when I take out my backhoe," he had bought a backhoe, of course, stored in his garage, "if I take out my backhoe and I get in it, I'm more winded than usual." So I was worried about what's called a differentiation syndrome. So in these patients, as those neutrophils are starting to appear, you get cytokine release that can cause a capillary leak syndrome. And that capillary leak syndrome can cause non-cardiogenic pulmonary edema. We did a CT scan of his chest. It was really classic, where he had pleural effusions and some bilateral fluffy pulmonary infiltrates. And the treatment for this, like the treatment in acute promyelocytic leukemia, the treatment for this is steroids. So we started him on dexamethasone 10 milligrams twice a day, and his symptoms resolved within 3 days. And then we slowly tapered the steroids over the course of a week or two. He subsequently entered that was the beginning of his response. He entered a complete remission, and actually, interestingly, remains in remission until this day. So he's been on therapy now probably for about a year and a half, normal blood counts, taking a pill every day, no real side effects, and he's back to using the backhoe that's in his garage.
I've heard a few stories like that, and like I said, you don't have to hear too many of them to be kind of excited. I'm curious, I see he had a pericardial effusion also. Is that clinically significant?
Yeah, so he didn't have pericardial tamponade, but we do see in differentiation syndrome, we do see patients who get pericardial infusions. At the time, we also, of course, did an echo just to be sure there was no tamponade physiology. That also resolved after getting the steroids.